You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy.
Hi, I'm Jody the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr the doc, and this is Mom and Doc Talk. We're so excited, as we always are, to have guests, but we're even more excited than usual because we have the wonderful Denise Pihas joining us. She might not be a name that you recognize because her kids are doing so well and doing amazing, and so she's not as involved and is intricately involved in the PANS community as she once was, but she is still very much involved, and it stands to say that the PANS community would not be what it is today were it not for Denise and the work that she did early on, the advocacy that she did early on. It's very possible that Jody would not be here with me. It's very possible that Resilience Naturopathic would not exist as it currently exists because Denise was an active and vocal member of the PANS community. So there are literally thousands of people who are getting the support that they are getting because of the work that Denise has done. Tens of thousands of people who are learning about homeopathy because of the work that Denise has done. So her humble, very humble bio is that she is first and foremost a mom of two amazing and courageous adult children and the wife to the love of her life for 30 years. She is a restaurant owner of the amazing Yanni's Bar and Grill. If you're ever in San Diego, you have to check it out. One of my favorites for sure. And in her spare time, she is still a PANS advocate. So we can't wait to hear more about your experience and the healing journey that you've been on and some of the victories that you guys have been. We're jumping way ahead, but this is all to say that you are a person who does not still need to be here. And you are. And when you did need to be here, you showed up for your family and you showed up for everybody else's family too. And you know, your bio just doesn't reflect just how much you have done for the PANS community as like a quiet, but very quiet and loud at the same time type of person, if that even makes sense. I don't know if I'm making sense. So welcome, Denise. We are very, very excited to have you here.
Oh, well, I'm excited to be here. And, you know, it goes both ways because I wouldn't be in this position right now sitting here if I hadn't met you. I guess it was 8 years ago. So yeah. It would be a completely different situation than it is right now. So we appreciate you so much back and we'll be forever thankful. And I know that somehow you and Jody, the universe was meant to have the two of you together, but thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, the universe works through you, I think. So,
right. Denise, I'm so glad that you're with us. So let's get started. Let's talk about, just tell us about your story. Tell us about how PANS first showed up in y'all's life.
Yeah. So in the summer of 2012 is when the, I guess the overnight kind of onset would occur, but like backing up a little bit before that in 2012, we noticed that Isabella is our daughter. She was having some like paleness, some lethargy, and just heat sensitivity. So we were about to embark on a big trip. So we said, well, let's get that on the books for an appointment with the doctor. And then we did go on this big trip to Europe. And what happened was she got sick. And it wasn't strep throat. She did have a sore throat, but she got sick and she had a fever. The very next day, what occurred was the severe panic attack. And it was something that we had never as parents encountered with her before. And I'd never seen, you know, one, but it definitely seemed to be, you know, what it was. And so we kind of just thought it was like a one-off that, okay, this is something weird and maybe it has something to do with the illness. And, you know, we just put it in the back of our minds. But that was just the very beginning. About 2 weeks later, we were still traveling and it was super hot day. That's when our life kind of shifted from there. She had a grand mal seizure and it was terrifying to say the least because we had never seen a seizure, you know, I've never seen a seizure. I didn't know at the time, you know, really that it was a seizure, but that's what I thought it might be, heat stroke. But it lasted a really long time. We went to the, you know, through ambulance, we went to the hospital and they said, you know, it was a seizure and she needs to see a neurologist when she goes back to the States. So, you know, we went back to the States, but, and had, you know, all of our, you know, appointment with neurologist, endocrinologist, every ologist in the book. And the, you know, the general practitioner as well. And all of them seemed to point in the direction of it being a psychiatric or a psych, you know, like she has just anxiety. And I just kind of could not figure out why they were suggesting that, because she had a seizure, you know. Right. Anyway, you know, we're getting all the blood work done, doing all those things, but things just did not let up. You know, she started having these seizures. She was very sensitive to people, heat, just in general sensitive. So we decided to move her from her public school to like a charter school that was going to be smaller, that it would have you know, less stress in her life, because we thought, okay, let's alleviate some of this. So we did that, and that was good for a little while, and it did help. But then, you know, as we all know with pandas, and at that time we knew nothing about pandas, but it's like whack-a-mole, that you kind of put one, you know, close something off and it pops up in another way. And so it did that, and it just started, she started having more and more seizures, started going back to doctors, you know, again. And by this time, you know, like there were, you know, a lot of psychological anxiety kind of feelings, you know, started her on anti-seizure medications. Those weren't working. They would cause more seizures. It was just like, it was a nightmare. And meanwhile, she couldn't barely go to school, you know, and if she did go to school, she had stomach aches and would have to come home. It was just really difficult. And then, you know, this was going on for at least going into the a year and a half or so into it, that her neurologist was like, because the symptoms started getting really severe, he said, well, I think that she has autoimmune encephalitis, and he was very sure of it. And I was like, oh, well, what's that? You know, I never heard of autoimmune encephalitis. And so he had given me the, you know, symptom checklist, told me some websites to go to. And it was really scary sounding, but she had all those symptoms. And we did like a Mayo Clinic panel for all of the possible types of, you know, autoimmune encephalitis. And of course, she was negative for all of those. So the one that he had thought she had was newly discovered. So I thought to myself, well, maybe what she has hasn't been discovered yet. You know, so that kind of got me, I mean, I was thankful in the sense that it got me like looking elsewhere and just going, you know, Google mom at night, you know, up all night typing in all kinds of things. And that's actually about the time when I started learning a little bit about PANS and pandas. And so at that time I was trying to get her into like Stanford and all that. But meanwhile, the doctors kind of threw up their hands. They're like, no, because she didn't test positive for this, basically, she has a psychiatric condition, and that's where you need to go and to follow that. And funny enough, when we did go to see a psychiatrist that was recommended in the very beginning, and she was like, oh no, she doesn't have an anxiety condition. No, no, no. And then in the second go around, she's like, oh yes, she has, you know, she was saying, you know, we need to try her different medications. And, you know, I'm like, we're willing to try anything. Like, I think all the parents are like, you know, we'll try this, that. But again, the symptoms just kept getting worse and worse, and there was no relief from any of those symptoms. You know, it was scary because a lot of the symptoms, along with the seizures, you know, there were like sometimes after the seizures, there were kind of like these psychotic episodes a few times, and just the amount of, you know, unknown. It was just, you know, terrifying for the entire family. And we just had no, it was isolating. We had no one to turn to. You know, the doctors were saying, oh, it's just this, try these medications. None of the medications were working. So since they weren't working, you know, and in the meantime, we had seen a homeopath because we had tried that with my son. So we were introduced to homeopathy, but that wasn't working. We started in the integrated medicine world and just chasing there and doing test after test and spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars because none of that was covered by insurance. And yeah, sometimes things would help for a little while, and then they go back again. It's like that whole whack-a-mole thing. So then almost, I guess it was like 3 years in, you know, no relief, and symptoms are not any better. And we had actually found a neurologist that gave her a PANDAS diagnosis. Hooray. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so excited we had this diagnosis. And then you know, her treatments were not doing any good at all. You know, they were, Isabel was so sensitive, so along the way, that's why she couldn't, you know, take any of these medications. The, you know, her body was just so sensitive. And so the next steps were like steroids and IVIG. And I was like, well, this makes no sense because everything she's just so sensitive to, why would I think that's going to work? And I was just like, where do I go? And for some reason, I decided to go to the PANDAS Network website for, I don't know, the millionth time, and somehow something would be me. And that was the day that I saw. So this is like, you know, and I'm fast forwarding a lot. And if anybody wants the long version, we've got that on a mom and doc talk somewhere. This was about 3.5 years in. So Isabel is about 15 and a half by this time. And I saw your name and I saw that you're in San Diego and that you treat PANS and PANDAS. And I'm like, well, I'm giving this one a go. You know, I'm like, let's try Dr. Barr. We have not, you know, not tried her yet. And so then, you know, it said natural, you know, medicine, you know, and a natural doctor. And then I didn't necessarily know that you were a homeopath at that time. And then I started like kind of looking in, you know, to your website and so forth. And, but, you know, of course we have our famous email that I sent you that, can you handle the complicated PANS case? Which they're all complicated, but
they are.
You know, I sent that to you and you had said that you had experience and, you know, that is what led us to you. And I'm so glad that we made it there, but there was just a lot, you know, that was just the, like the abbreviated kind of version of how PANS found us.
Yeah. Well, what you shared, I mean, like, it is true. Most PANS cases are actually pretty complicated. And most people, especially when they get to the place that they're exploring homeopathy, have already used lots of different things, which unfortunately makes things just a little bit more complicated. Like, the earlier you recognize PANS and the earlier you start with homeopathy, the less complicated it tends to be. But I also have the advantage of seeing lots of complicated cases because people don't usually find me, or now, I mean, it's different now, but they used to only find me when things had already gotten to the point that it was complicated and nothing was working that should have been working. So I know Jody can definitely relate to all of the, that should have been working, but it made it worse. And what do I do? And how do I, where do I go? I've tried all the things. So as you said, there's our famous email, because I will never forget that. The can you handle a complicated case of PANS? And I also remember you telling me after the fact, like probably years after the fact, after we had already had like a lot of success with Isabella, which, by the way, she was our very first ever guest. Did you know that, Denise? She was our first ever guest for the podcast. So it's episode 19, if you guys want to hear it from Isabella's side and her experience. So go back and check that if you haven't checked that one out already. But I think it was like a year or more into it that you're like, by the way, I totally wasn't sure about you because of homeopathy. Like I was like excited. And then I saw and I realized that you focus primarily on homeopathy, and like you sunk a little bit. You're like, oh no, we've already done this. So what was it that made you be willing to try it again?
Well, I did, you know, the homeopath that we had used for Isabella, I had used with our son years before that, and he had some success with him, and I used him for myself. You know, some of the remedies that he gave me worked amazingly well, but he was not a good fit at all for Isabella, and his method, I don't know, it's just something had changed also, I think, about him. So it was just not a good fit. And I mean, I think I told you also that, you know, I was at a fork, you know, the path of the road, the fork of the road that, you know, okay, I think I even got a call from the doctor while I was in your office, now thinking about it, that, you know, I can go this way and I can do steroids and I can do IVIG, or I can give this a try. And as I mentioned, you know, Isabella had been so sensitive to medications. And I said, you know what, this is the IVIG and the steroids are always going to be there. They're not going away. I just have this instinctive feeling that I need to go this way and give this a try. And so that's what we did. And that was life changing. But, you know, I don't know. My instinct just told me this was the path to go forward.
You know, there's so many people who get to that similar place where, I mean, you were at like a fork in the road after several other wrong, like going down paths that just didn't work out, that you found out to be dead ends, right? So it's like, and I mean, I definitely had similar experiences where I had personally had some dead ends with some medications or medications that didn't work or didn't help me the way they did. And this is true of so many PANS families, because PANS kids just don't respond to medications the way somebody without PANS does. And then, you know, you get to the place where you're like, all right, I could try this thing that maybe I either don't really understand, or I've tried before and with a different person and it didn't work so well. Or I could do this. And like, I love what you said. There's always that other stuff will always still be there. Like I can go there if I have to. And maybe we'll try not having to go there too.
Yeah. I feel like at least 40 moms are nodding their heads when you said it was your instinct that said homeopathy. And that's such a strong, hard to explain. I think that's what so many of us experience. So talk to us a little bit about your experience with homeopathy with different providers.
Versus different providers? Well, I mean, just from the Western side of it, the Western, you know, regular, you know, normal going to a doctor's office, I always felt like I had to speak like 100 miles an hour, you know, because I had, you know, 15 minutes to like say everything that I needed to say. And so I always felt that we were being judged, that we weren't listened to. You know, there was, I don't know, just this, like, because you don't check this box, therefore it means that it's a psychiatric diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And that just did not resonate with me, that, you know, yes, there are psychiatric symptoms. Like, I get that. I see them every day. I understand that. But I don't necessarily think that it is like this, because we're trying the medications you're suggesting, you know, we're trying all this, my instinct, but that she was fine. I mean, before, you know, being, you know, 12 years old, she was very active, involved, just busy, busy, busy all the time, you know, good student, you know, singing, dancing, all that stuff. And then suddenly to be cut down to not doing anything, I'm like, that's not psychiatric. There's something wrong. And the first awareness that, you know, making that one appointment with the doctor, the first little sprinkling signs that I saw were that she was heat sensitive, that she was pale, you know, and not having the energy that she used to have. That was the first sign for me, not the psychiatric symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I would say how it differed was going in with into homeopathy is, and also I have to say with some of the integrative medicine, you know, doctors that we went to, there was the validation that like you're, you know, what you're saying is true, you know, that you're not making it up, that, you know, there is a root cause, that you're listen, you know, people would listen to you, that I didn't have to, even though I did speak 100 miles an hour, because I just remember always saying, I'm sorry, I'm speaking so fast. But I always felt like I had only this certain amount of time to say so many things of what was going on. But with like going into your office from the very beginning, you were just welcoming and listening and understanding. And I felt like you had been in our, you know, our shoes almost, and come to find out, you know, you kind of had, but I didn't know that in the beginning, you know, and we hadn't experienced that before. Like, you know, getting, say, this diagnosis of PANDAS was one thing. And, you know, we've been chasing that for so long just for the validation of that. But that really didn't mean all that much, you know, just getting yeah. this diagnosis. I really felt that what differed is I felt like there would be a resolve in mm-hmm. the end. This, I don't know, again, my instinct, but that's what I felt like, there was a plan of action. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like so many moms feel that way, like are like coming to homeopathy and having someone that fully understands us is like the release of a weight that we carry for a long time. And then follow-up appointments are pretty much therapeutic for us as moms, even though it's not the intent, but right. it like it almost feels like it was the beginning of my healing journey as far as things go, right? And it just it's just an ease for us as moms.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. It was like, oh, finally someone understands me and is not thinking that we're making this up, and that you know, believes that they can help us.
Yeah.
So I know that there's obviously pretty big differences between like conventional medicine and homeopathy, and even integrative medicine and homeopathy, but I've heard from people that they have different experiences from homeopath to homeopath. And so I'm just curious if you've had any, notice any like differences working with different providers of homeopathy that you think had any impact for you guys.
I mean, so we only really worked with, like the other homeopath, and, you know, well, I'm working on my own with, you know, other within resilience. But, mm-hmm. you know, you were the only other person that we worked with. And, again, it was just the other homeopath. I like, and Isabel would probably say the same thing. There was something behind it that just seemed like he didn't really believe what we were saying. Like there was like the things that we were saying, you know, and any PANS mom will probably say the same thing, that most people are like, there's no way that can really be happening every day in your house. You know, there's no yeah. way that these symptoms are that severe. Like you must be making it. And I kind of feel like really that was like we could feel that, you know, there yeah. was this sense that, okay, we've got this, we're going to take mm-hmm. care of it. And that's yeah. what we felt differently with you, you know, that somehow, some way we were going to figure this out.
Yeah. You know? That's, and it's so interesting because it's even written in the Organon that Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, says that you must believe the person who's like in front of you. You must believe them. And, even to the point that if somebody is experiencing psychotic symptoms, you need to believe, because regardless of whether it's part of your experience, it is truly part of their experience, and you will not understand it in a way that you can then lead to like make a selection for a homeopathic remedy that will help them if you can't understand what their true experience is. Go ahead, Jody.
No, I was just going to say, Isabella was older whenever Pan showed up into y'all's world. How do you think her age impacted y'all's experience?
It was a huge impact. And I'm just going to say that even though like her overnight, onset was at 12, I really believe that there were situations throughout her childhood that were giving us indications that, oh, this is going to be happening. It's kind of percolating in there. There were situations, but definitely as a 12-year-old, there's two things. I mean, on the good hand, I think that when we saw Dr. Barr for the first time and just continuing the care, she was able to give her experience herself. And she was a very articulate and well-read 12-year-old and very attuned with herself. So I think on the one hand, it was great for us. On the other hand, with all the other providers, I think it was really hard and it caused a lot of trauma. And I didn't think I was going to get emotional. But I feel like to just constantly being told, like, it's not like you're 3 years old and you're not really comprehending what's going on at the doctor's office. At 12 years old, you understand and you have the ability to go home at night and look on Google yourself. What does it mean, disassociative, this? And what does it mean, any kind of psychiatric illness, and to have that in the back of your brain, and also to just not be believed, and understood. It was, I think that, and being a girl and being 12, it was like, oh, it's just anxiety. Oh, it's just, this is normal. It's just hormones. And I'm not saying that hormones didn't play a part in anything, but it's just one little piece of the puzzle. There was definitely something to find the root cause, let's say, or to, find a way, a path forward. And so it was traumatic, being older, I think, in a lot of ways. It's hard for the older.
I mean, it sounds like it really did impact the care that you received, because there was more things that they could possibly blame, right, than you would blame for like a 4-year-old, or maybe not even more, but like different, but more so that like different things that they could be blamed for, like what she was experiencing. Really, and then
can't go to bed, oh really, yeah. like at 4, like you would never, of course they're just, but at 12 or 13 or 14, you can, this is your choice. Kind of, it was like, it was the implication, of course, it wasn't her choice. But it was the implication that somehow it was her choice to be the way she was. And I think was really, psychologically damaging, and traumatizing to have to unravel all of that. And I think also, as you said, Dr. Barr, with just on another side note, that, catching it younger, is a lot easier. So at 12 years old, even though she had this extreme overnight, the situation, it didn't happen overnight, and it That's a lot to unravel, you know, 12, 15 years, actually, by the time we saw you, you know, her onset, you know, from, you know, if we had really had any idea, you know, like the little ragey kind of situations that came up, but then they would go away. Like there were thoughts that crossed my mind, like, I should maybe take her somewhere because this is not, you know, right. Every time she was sick, when the doctor would say, is she always this anxious? And I was like, oh no, you know, every time it rained.
When she's sick.
Yeah, she's sick. But then it would, you know, clear up as soon as she was better. It's hard, I think, on the older ones.
Yeah. I thought about it for sure, because obviously I have a relationship with you and Isabella. And I remember one diagnosis in particular, and I will leave it to you if you want to say it, that was suggested to her that could be going on. And I remember it coming back way after the fact, like, could this have been right? And like still experiencing some amount of trauma, like, is there any chance that they were right? And that this is explained by this other thing that basically means it's all in my head, you know? And it's just, thankfully she was able to move through it. And like, I think that in and of itself was part of the healing process, to like work through some of the trauma from getting treatment. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, I mean, I'm guessing we're already there, but like, what were the biggest challenges in your recovery journey? Like, was it the trauma aspect of things, or were there other things that just like even logistics that were really biggest challenges?
I mean, yes, the trauma definitely was a big challenge. And, you know, for me, I'm still a little bit, you know, unraveling a little bit of my own trauma and PTSD, and I know Isabella, you know, has been working on it for a long time and she's doing great now, but it was very traumatic, and challenging. But, I would say like, just being believed, you know, being told that, oh, you know, we think you have conversion disorder, you know, I mean, think about who you're, you know, what you're saying, you know, to someone. It like you said, you know, sticking with, it just doesn't go away with that, you know, what a possible diagnosis would be. But even with homeopathy, you know, there are challenges too, because like, for me, I would say the biggest challenge was, like when we were doing great, you know, when things were like, oh, this is good, we're doing better and there's less seizures, and then there's a seizure, and it would drag, you know, I know for sure it would drag me back in. And, you know, Isabella, I'm sure too, you know, I'm sure she has said that it was challenging, but she was the one actually that would prop me up. And she would say, Mom, it's okay. We're going to, you know, it's going to go back and, you know, everything's going to go back to normal. I'm going to be with, you know, without less seizures again, it's going to be okay. And then also I would say the other thing with, homeopathy, and when I'm not sure if people bring this up sometimes, but, after you've been in it for like a year or so, that you're like used to seeing these like big jumps, you know, like, oh, you know, the seizures are down to like once a month now from every day, you know, but then things are really, they slow down, and even, and there's still all these outside smaller symptoms that need to be taken care of. And so you don't see these big celebrations as much. And so it can be daunting, but that's the way of homeopathy, because all you have to do is think back, well, okay, last year she was having seizures every day. And last year, you know, you just have to look at the symptom list, you know, she was having these kind, you know, the intrusive thoughts and all, you know, and things, just the symptom list was so long. So I guess those were the biggest challenges, but then they ended up, you know, working themselves out, but it was challenging at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk to us about some of your biggest victories that you had with the healing journey.
I think it was a victory, but, I guess like going down the road of victories. Like the first one I would say is like, because Isabella had been really good at articulating her symptoms, I think, right from the get-go. And so just having an alleviation of her seizures right from the beginning, you know, going down from like every day or, you know, to like twice a week, then down to once a week, you know, once a month, every 2 months, 6 months, et cetera, to now being, drum roll, 5 years plus seizure free since 2018.
Awesome.
Yeah. So never, ever, ever, you know, would that, you know, back then that never would have been a consideration. I just thought that was the part of our lives forever. But, you know, victories being also like the first time that, you know, she was sleeping by herself and, you know, cause I'd been sleeping with her for every day for years and going, even just going to the bathroom alone, like I would have to stand outside the door taking a shower. I think Dr. Barr would say maybe when she saw Isabella's eyes for the first time, because she was so sensitive to light that, you know, she was wearing these special glasses that would dim down the, you know, and keep her less, you know, triggered by the lights. Cause there were like a lot of lights at her school, like fluorescent lights and things like that. But, you know, every day for us is a celebration really and a victory, but, you know, just even, I never thought that she would graduate high school, you know, because when we were first seeing Dr. Barr, I mean, she couldn't go to school. She was in bed, you know, all the, you know, they gave her special leaves all the time for, you know, she could do her work from home. You know, we were lucky we were at, by this time, a different charter school, but they were really great in working with us. Maybe we can just chat about this later, but, we had a 504 plan and this was very helpful for her. And she was, you know, having an older kid. I think she was very much involved in creating the 504 plan. And when she would do a presentation each year, for that. I think that was something that was really important having, in school, but mm-hmm. I never thought that she would graduate high school and then go on to college and then, you know, go to college on the East Coast and we're in San Diego and, you know, graduate in 4 years during a pandemic. I mean, I could go on and on. She worked in Europe for a summer after graduating, traveled all through Europe, you know, but with a friend and sometimes even by herself sleeping in hostels. You know, and, you know, she just went to Japan and was there for the earthquake, you know, everything was fine. But it's just, but years ago, like, that would not have been fine. Like, you know, yeah. She's coming, you know, it's just amazing. Like I say, it just keeps going. Like the victories keep going, you know, yeah. They haven't stopped.
Every time I talk to her, you know, and it's not all that often anymore, but every time I talk to her, there's like a new thing that I'm just like jaw on the floor, like amazed at how she's doing and the way that she has taken a lot of like the sensitivity that she had and turned that sensitivity into so many strengths. And, you know, there's two sides to it, you know, and it's the same quality is still there. And it was a problem before. And it is such a strength for her now. I mean, we were sort of already talking about this, but like what, anything else you can share about like what you know from her about what her life is like now?
Well, she does live with us, so. So I do know a little, but she doesn't spend very much time at home. She's been a musician forever. And she wasn't really able to pursue that so much during the PANS years. And so now, you know, she has a band, she performs by herself, but she also has a backing band and, she has two bands actually, and then, is involved with a lot of music, other art programs. And then she works She works right now at the restaurant for us, is an aspiring server, but she's doing this temporarily because the music doesn't pay the bills, let me say, right now. But most likely, I mean, I think she is trying to decide. Most likely she will go for her master's, but she is just taking some time for herself right now, which is really important. Most likely she is going to be moving out, you know, sometime in the near future. So she's looking for, you know, actively looking for a roommate or roommates because San Diego's expensive. But she's doing great. I mean, you know, life in general these days is not always, you know, butterflies, like for the world, you know, butterflies and unicorns. But I feel like the strategies and her healing now has, you know, the name of your business is the perfect name because she's so resilient now to whatever happens. You know, she was in Japan and the earthquake happened. And I'm like, I didn't even look at her location, like while she was in Japan, like for me, this is, you know, and then I'm like, oh, and I'm texting her, are you okay? She's like, oh yeah, we didn't even know. But for her to even hear that there was an earthquake back in the day, you know, she would have been, I don't know what she wouldn't have been in Japan, first of all. You know, she would have been afraid to travel. So she's just so adventurous now, you know, like she just has this lust for life, which I, you know, she's my hero. I just can't say, and I could talk all day just about how wonderful she is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree with like resilience is the thing I would say. And that is why I named my practice Resilience Naturopathic, because that's what we want to help people get to be resilient. You know, we're not looking for perfection. We're looking for the ability to bounce back in hardships. And like, she's had some stressful stuff that she's been through and just like, boom, bounce back. No, no need for anything.
We laugh about it all the time because we feel like we're like, this is a test, right? Like, you know, every time something, she's somewhere in her, she's with her, sometimes she's with her one friend and it's like something, you know, happens. We're like, this is a test to like, see how resilient are you really? And she's just so resilient and so strong.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let's talk about you for a second, Denise. What is life like for you now?
Well, very different. Very different. Because before, I mean, it was so, I mean, hard isn't the right word, you know, it was just, there was no life, you know, my whole life revolved around when is like the next, you know, next shoe going to drop. I couldn't do anything for myself. I couldn't even, you know, if I thought about going to do like a yoga class, you know, and I think I did in the beginning and like getting called like, oh my gosh, your daughter had a seizure. You have to leave, you know, like just that feeling, that like unsettled feeling that what's going to go wrong next. And that is no longer a part of my life. Like I don't have to, I don't even think about like, oh, is there even the possibility of her having a seizure? You know, I remember like last year when she was in Croatia and I was like, all of a sudden decided to check Isabella's location. And it was like in the middle of the sea. And I was like, normal me, but back in the day would be like, oh my gosh, she's drowned, you know? But I was like, oh, she must be on a boat somewhere. You know, my life is very different than it was. It's a lot more balanced. I mean, my business, strangely enough, has taken a lot of, like since the pandemic, a lot changed. So I work a lot more than I used to, but I don't have, it's just different because I don't have to, take her to doctor, you know, doctor's appointments all day long. You know, worry if she's taking this medication or that medication. Life is much better, for me for sure. Now my marriage is better. I mean, during the PANS years, I know a lot of parents would, you know, talk to this, that it's really hard on your marriage because I'm an all or nothing person. Like, I'm going to give you everything. And at that time, I felt like I had to devote 150% of my time and my energy to Isabella healing and finding a way to heal her. So it was hard on our marriage for a while, you know, and I didn't ask for help, which I should have, I should have delegated some of the tasks, but I felt like nobody really understood, you know, what I was going through. And like, also that goes to like the isolation that you feel as a, just in general, as a human being, you know, my friends didn't understand, family members didn't understand. But I look at things a little bit differently now that, I don't know, maybe the times have changed, but that I've evolved too, that if I were to anything like this ever happen again, I would be different in the sense that, I would be much more, you know, delegating experience, you know, needs, asking for help, talking to family, talking to friends, just talking to anybody that could help. But I feel like now life is much more balanced for me. You know, I've done homeopathy, because there was a lot of trauma to unwind for me, and even stuff from my childhood that I didn't realize. And just the PTSD of like, with Isabella living with us, you know, too, like when she wasn't here for some reason, it was easier for me. But then when she was here, like living with us, I would think, oh, is everything okay? And worrying, you know, a little bit more. But now that I've really learned to, you know, through homeopathy and some therapy, you know, it's really helped quite a bit.
And what about, this is something I try to talk to moms about, but I don't feel like I can ever fully make it make sense unless I'm talking to a mom that has a kiddo that is very, very far into the journey, or, you know, all the way through. Tell me what homeopathy, really Isabella's journey back to health, taught you about yourself. I'm going to ask you to say some things that you don't normally say about yourself, some kind, loving things, but there's just, as moms, there are these things that we gain that I don't necessarily have words for. So I'm looking for some words from you.
I mean, I'm going to say that, and it is hard to really like say that, like, you know, good things about yourself, but I feel like I've always had a good intuition, but I never listened to it. And so I try to do that now. But I feel like that's something for sure. Number one thing, but also that to not be afraid to speak my truth, because I grew up taught that, you know, all the doctors are always right, you know, and don't question people. And that was really hard, because I, all through this, I was like, no, I don't think what you're saying is actually true. And so I would say just not being afraid to, you know, say what I believe in. And I would say also, that I've learned to be patient. Well, I think I've always kind of been a patient person, but in a different kind of way to be patient, to like, sometimes you just need to like sit with somebody, you know, and I don't know how to articulate this, but just to not like have patience for like a situation, but sometimes you need to just be with people. And if you can, you know, you don't always have to like please other people. Like, I've always, you know, my business is a restaurant owner, so I please people. So I've always been a people pleaser, but sometimes now I've realized that I need to please myself and my family and their first, and so other people come second, and what their needs come second. there's so many things. I think all of us pans and pandas, parents, caregivers, you know, we all have like these special superpowers that we all have, that we're all different and we have, and we all need different superpowers, but somehow I think we activate them during this process. I feel like I'm really good in a crisis situation, that I can keep calm. And that has served me all through that process of PANS and PANDAS. And it's even served me now. Like I had, you know, some situations that, you know, people were in crisis, and that because of the skills I learned when Isabella was in crisis, that I was able, you know, sit with them, be patient, and help them out of crisis. And then giving people grace, I think, like just giving them a free pass sometimes is another thing that I've learned. I've learned a lot, but giving, you know, like not being judgmental of other people necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, because we just don't know, you know, you know, we think we know other people, but we just don't know. But I would have been a great private investigator in another life. I think, or a scientist or something, you know, I would have, or a homeopath. I didn't realize how much, not that I liked, but I'm really good at, like, I don't give up, you know, like, I just don't give up until I get the answer, you know, and I'm fortunate that I did have some of these traits. I mean, because I think that helped me, even though I spent too much time searching this and searching that and maybe tried too many different things. I felt like I wasn't going to give up until I found the right person, which, and Dr. Barr,
you know. You know, I always say that I feel like for everybody who can get through it, that PANS is actually a gift in one way or another, right? It teaches you all of those things that you learned about yourself. It gives you appreciation for things that we take for granted. And these kids, when they come through on the other end, like there is something about having experienced that and then bouncing back that just gives them this ability to just do some really remarkable things. Like I am routinely impressed by what PANS kids who get through and past PANS are able to do in the world. And so I think ultimately it's a gift. And for anybody who's listening, who is on the early end, that is like, no way is this a gift. I'm hopeful for you that you will see the gift at some point in the future. It's just a gift that is hard at first. Mm-hmm. Very hard. Like, let's just acknowledge it's very hard. So let's shift gears a little bit. So obviously Isabella is recovered. She's doing really well, like that 5+ years and like all the things. And you guys can for sure go and listen to Isabella's podcast too, or her episode 19. It's really she's an excellent speaker, and it is really good to hear her perspective too. So in spite of this, like, you haven't said, okay, fantastic, done with PANS, hallelujah, let's go on and live life and catch up for lost time. You're still actively involved in advocacy for PANS and PANDAS. And in particular here locally in San Diego, you are working on trying to get a center devoted to pediatric inflammatory brain disorders at our local children's hospital. So tell us a little bit about what you're working on.
Well, I've been working on it for quite a while, 7 or 8 years, but it hasn't been until the last year and a half, 2 years that there has been, there wasn't a doctor really at the hospital that would really champion, like the administration agreed that there needs to be something, but there was never really a doctor that was like, yes, I believe in PANS, because it's been the opposite. And so I had been working with the foundation for over the years, and just kind of being a squeaky wheel, like, okay, you know, every so often we meet and see if there's anything that we can do, because my goal is that, you know, no child experience what we experienced at our hospital. And so that's the goal, that if someone goes in with like all these crazy symptoms, that they're just not like shifted to the side and said, oh, you just have a psychiatric diagnosis. So the Pediatric Inflammatory Brain Disorders Program is just in its infancy. And actually, I don't even know when it will be fully, you know, operating. They do have a fellow and she is doing a lot of research right now and she has seen some patients. They are actively looking for a care coordinator. We did a fundraiser for them in April, which we were lucky enough to have you attend. And we raised $25,000 for them, which is great. The local Scripps Ranch unit is taking on the PIBD program as well and using it as their fundraiser for this year. So that's really awesome. And that the hospital actually put this on a list is a very big thing because I can't just ask them to fundraise for it. They have to have been approved by the administration. So it's an upward battle. I'm trying to take a different, you know, now that I am kind of out of the, you know, mud of all of this and out of it a bit. I'm looking at it. Before I was just like in their face all the time. Now I'm taking just, you know, I'm doing all I can do. And I don't know if it will ever, you know, completely materialize, but I'm doing all I can without taking away from me right now because, I am hopeful, you know, and they are making steps forward. And I feel like, as doctors, newer, younger doctors come on board, I feel like, you know, especially going through the pandemic, I think that has shifted everybody's thoughts about illness because long COVID wasn't, you know, known, yeah. you know, before the, you know, there was like, even though, you know, PANS is after an illness. So it's a little bit more relatable now that inflammation yep. can occur after an illness. So I feel like we're headed in the right direction. But it's just being a squeaky wheel that, you know, that having to get this rolling even. But PANS is not, it doesn't discriminate, you know, who gets it. And yep. we were very fortunate in the fact, financially fortunate in the fact, and time too, because my husband said, you just go, you know, you figure this out. I was able to try everything that I could to get Isabella better, but not everybody has that luxury. And so if caught early, you know, I don't know, but potentially, like if someone just go, you know, they're experiencing PANS symptoms and they're 3 or 4 or younger before things get chronically, you know, it's in an acute stage, then there's the potential that they wouldn't have to spend years and years. I mean, I want you to have all the business you can. And I think you have, you know, I think you have enough, right? You can always use more, but I think that we just need to look at all areas that if there's a child that can be saved through this and the years of agony of the family and the child, then, you know, this is.
We want to be here to support the people that need us, and we don't want people in our world forever. You know, like we want people to heal and to not need us anymore, or to talk to us like twice a year to make sure everything is still going where it's supposed to be. And the easier and faster we can get people there, the happier we are. So we are for sure. Like we are, you know, our mission is to make PANS and PANDAS a thing of the past and homeopathy the medicine of the future. And like we know we're not in the position that we can like reverse PANS and PANDAS for humanity, but we can make it a thing of the past for individuals for sure. So
And you know, all that, I mean, this is like digressing of that subject, but anyway, I'll just finish that up that, you know, I'm excited that they are taking steps forward in trying to help children. It's going to take a while. That's, you know, the message that I keep getting, that it's going to take time to completely change, like a paradigm shift. And I think getting the newer physicians in.
What kind of support could you use from the community in your efforts?
Money. That's one thing I've learned in this journey, is that, like, for instance, in regards to the how the hospitals work and so forth, it's not like all of the clinics and all the, you know, everything. It's not, it very rarely does it just get started within the hospital. It takes a lot of financial backing. So, but I mean, the more people, you know, talk about it, like, you know, the more awareness, the better. And so, like, even if it's just, you know, the 25,000 was a drop in the bucket, but out of that dinner that we had, there was a psychologist that happened to be there, and she was like, I want to go work in this, and, you know, I'm not industry, but I want to go work for Rady Children's to help, you know, help kids with pants. So, I mean, you just never know. And there's people that, you know, the awareness, the more you talk about it, the more somebody else might know somebody. So, I just think with community awareness, is just, you know, helpful for all of our communities, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of all of our communities, do you have any advice that you would offer to parents who might be wanting to try and make similar changes in their local children's hospitals?
So I would say, first of all, reaching out to every hospital has a foundation, which is where the fundraising occurs, and talking to them, first of all, just making them aware about PANS. And then secondly, checking to see if there's someone that actually treats people with PANS and our kids, and then and trying to make a connection with that person, and trying to develop a step forward to make a program. The meetings that we had, and, you know, meetings with administration saying, oh yeah, we're going to fund this, no problem, we're all on board, or other doctors, and then it just falls through. It's almost like the ups and downs. And I have to be honest for myself, it's not for the faint of heart, because it brought me, every time I stepped foot inside the hospital, it would bring me back to my PTSD of being turned away, not being, you know, validated. And again, with this situation, the same, you know, like, yeah, we need this, but we can't do this right now. And so, I feel like, you know, it's not something someone should start in their beginning process, you know, it might take your mind off of things, but you know, it's difficult, and it might be triggering for you as well. But I would say definitely making contact with the foundation is a good first step.
That's an excellent piece of advice. Thank you.
Yeah. I did want to, you know, some thoughts as we were talking about all of this were like entering my mind, and I don't know on the time how we are, but I just wanted to just briefly just talk about like this like new chapter in my life for being a parent of a you know, adult child that had PANS, like just new parenting, you know, as an adult, she's an adult, I'm an adult, we live in the same house, and how we had to shift the way our relationship works, because, you know, all those years I was making all of her decisions, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I was choosing all the paths that she should go down. And that served us well at that time. But we're talking about so many years now that it had become a pattern. And then, and of course, I am, you know, so happy that Isabel is where she is and who she is and everything, but it was challenging at first to to have new patterns in the way we relate to one another, and to allow her. And I had to like scribble little mantras to myself that, you know, because you're so used to jumping in mm-hmm. and saving the day, like all the things that the character traits that I had that served me so well in the beginning of PANS isn't necessarily what I need right now. I need to let her be her. And I need to allow her to make her own decisions in life. And that took a little bit to get there, you know, just because yeah. it's wired in you now, like, oh, you should. And, you know, but it's a beautiful thing, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see like the person that they were supposed to be all these years that they become. So.
You know, you're not alone in having to figure out how to shift your parenting style. Even like it's for sure a big change because you have to shift your parenting style developmentally, right? When you like shift from, a tween to a teen to an adult. But even with when people have younger kids, I mean, Jody, you could probably speak to this, and I think we have before, about how as you're healing and you're seeing your kid catch up with the things that they were like delayed on because of the condition, that you have to like do like rapid, like figure out how to like parent this new child, like that's catching up really, really quickly and all of a sudden has very different ways of relating to the world and relating to you and different capabilities and all of that. It's hard. Yeah. It was really hard.
Yeah. I had to learn to not be over functioning all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I needed to over function before in order to get to where we were, but it just does not serve me or her or our family anymore. And it takes a bit. We're so like to be here now, you know, is not a place that I thought I would ever be, you know. The best I hoped for was like for her to graduate high school at one point, you know. I just did not see that this future would be possible. And we're really fortunate that out of desperation that we did find homeopathy, because we definitely, there was nothing out there that would help her. And all of, you know, the symptoms just dropped. And it was not, you know, it was not an easy journey, but none of the, you know, but no journey. I mean, but it was way better than nothing works and the side effects are, you know, 100 times worse. And you know, all the things that went along with that, it wasn't as much as we all would like for just to take one pill and make it be better. It isn't, it takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what words of advice would you offer to someone with a teen that's still struggling with PANS?
I know probably I have heard it on, you know, other podcasts that you guys have done, but I mean, just keeping the hope alive and not giving up. And I would say holding on to the smallest, to the largest of victories, to the smallest of victories, because there is going to be at one point, you know, if you're just beginning the journey and you're seeing progress, there is going to be regression. That's just the way this goes. You're going to get there eventually, but just hold on to the victories, because that's what got me through. Like I would just hold on to, okay, she was this way. She got that, you know, she was able to achieve, you know, only one seizure in 6 months. We got there. We're going to just start all over and we're going to get there again. And it's maybe 7 months, but it's, you know, we're going to have to wait and see, or maybe it's going to be the same again, but you're not going to go back down to the place that you were. It might be a temporary, you know, regression, but you just hold on to the hope.
Fantastic. Well, Denise, like I said at the beginning, I'm so grateful for you and your quiet advocacy. I mean, you're not the loudest person in the world, but you are a strong person, and that you never gave up for your daughter. And you shared what you learned with the community, usually quietly, right? You would have a lot of one-on-one conversations with people and support people. And like, you are just somebody who, as you said, you have a whole lot of strengths that PANS really showed to you and like brought to the forefront. And I am so grateful for you. And I am going to speak on behalf of all the people who don't know that they need to be grateful for you. We are grateful for you. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. Can I just say a thank you to you? I mean, we honestly would not have been where we are. And I just thought of one more thing about the parents. When I started this journey in 2012, that we started this journey, there was not a Facebook group. And there were very few places that you could go for help. And I would say also utilize the homeopathic Facebook group, because that is such a warm and welcoming community. And I bet there's somebody out there that is going through something similar to you. So just, ask the question. But thank you, Dr. Barr. Thank you, Jody, for being the pioneers and, spreading the awareness that you do, and just continually giving the support that you do to all the families. And you are much loved and much appreciated.
Well, I am so proud to walk the trail that you blazed right before me. I think it's an honor I always love. I could listen to you and Isabella just talk forever. And I think that there's just, y'all are so inspiring to so many people, so many families with teenagers, older kiddos, that like there's absolutely hope in that. And, for me, even with having a younger kiddo, hearing Isabella's story and just talk to you guys about it, it's just every single time I love talking to y'all, and just really appreciate that over the years, y'all are still here. Y'all are still telling your story, and over time, quiet advocacy or not like loud screaming, like wild advocacy, it slowly changes things and it makes a difference. So that's awesome that you guys are still here, still advocating and telling Isabella's story and your story too. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time with us today, Denise. And we will look forward to seeing you hopefully soon in the near, very, very near future. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for pans and pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.